To begin, just thinking a moment about the introductory notes I put in the lesson plan for tonight, which is lesson five. These six kings that we're going to discuss, remember the first king of Israel was who? And when I say Israel, I'm talking about the divided kingdom. Jeroboam. Okay, so we're going to take up his son Nadab, and then there's five other kings that follow that we're going to briefly discuss tonight. What I want you to note about these kings that none of these men were faithful to God. Each one of these men insisted upon following in the path of what Jeroboam had set up. The false priesthood, the idols that were set up, the golden calves, the false places of worship. Everything about their service was false and not acceptable to God. And they all insisted upon that. You'll notice, too, as you read the lesson, what happened to most of these men, these six kings? Some type of violent death, okay? It was a conspiracy or a military coup or some military conflict. It was a cause of death of four of these six kings. The next thing about these kings is that these six kings come out of five different dynasties. Now, what I mean by dynasty is family. For instance, when we look at David, all of the kings in Judah came from the family of David. It was Solomon, Rehoboam, and it goes on. We've already discussed Abijah. Next, we'll get into Jehoshaphat. And we'll work our way on down through Uzziah, Hezekiah, Josiah. All of these kings were the family of David. That was one dynasty. There had been another family. That was Saul. God took it away from Saul and gave it to David. But here in the northern 10 tribes, we see several dynasties. I gave you a handout that looks like this, the dynasties of the northern kingdom, okay? And what I'm really trying to show you on that is the number of changes in family that became the king. I have 10 different dynasties. Some counts will give 9 because some counts will not count dynasty number 4. But we'll see Jeroboam's dynasty, 2 kings. Baasha, who followed, 2 kings. Zimri, he was the only one. And it goes on in such manner, okay? So I did that so you can see the turmoil that was constantly going on in the northern kingdoms. There was really just a couple of dynasties that lasted for an extended period of time. One is what I have is the 5th dynasty, Omri, and the infamous one that we know of in that dynasty is Ahab, that we'll discuss next in the next class. And then the following dynasty, Jehu, which was approximately 100 years. The 5 kings that were in his dynasty. Other than that, the dynasties were primarily 1 or 2 kings. So indicating a lot of turnover, turmoil that existed throughout the time period of the northern kingdom. Of course, what brought on this turmoil? Not following God. Instability because they didn't follow God. Okay. So if you start looking, you know, trying to add up the years that I've got beside each reign, that will get a little bit confusing. For instance, in Dynasty 5, Omri, I've got 12 years. Well, Dynasty 4, I've got is Tibni. In that time frame, there was a civil war. So that 12 years actually includes an overlap of 4 years of when Tibni was ruling half the land. And in Dynasty 6, there's some overlap between Joaz and Jeroboam. And there may be some other in there where there's some overlap, where actually there was 2 kings ruling in Israel at one time, a father-son. So So don't try to add these up and, you know, come up with some certain number that's going to go from one date to another date. These overlaps in a rule would throw such a count off. But that's the purpose of this handout, is just to see the short-term nature of most of the families that ruled the time of Israel. Any comment on that handout? There's another handout that I've got, and it looks like this. It's the early kings timeline of Judah and Israel. The purpose of this handout is to give you really a visual representation of how fast these kings, the ones that we'll be studying tonight, they turned over, as far as, you know, turning over their reign from one king to the next. And you'll notice on that the long time frame from Asa in approximately 911 becoming king to the end of his reign in about 870. But there in the bottom on that under Israel, you see that during that time frame, Nadab, Baasha, Elah, Zimri, Omri, and the beginning of Ahab, all within that same time frame of when one king was ruling over Judah. So a tremendous turnover. Now, in the notes above, I put a little caveat there to say, just because a king rules for a long period of time does not mean his rule was faithful. The classic example of that is Manasseh, who I think ruled the longest of any king, yet was extremely unfaithful through most of the years of his reign. So longevity doesn't necessarily mean God's approval. So I don't want that to be misconstrued. But this turnover of kings, you know, rapid turnover from family to family, indicates an unfaithfulness and a way of life that brought about this type of turnover. Anybody got a comment on that handout? Another handout I gave is entitled "The False Worship of Canaan and Judah." Now, by Judah, maybe I should call that Judah and Israel. I don't mean Judah by itself. What I'm really trying to do is just talk about some of the ways of the worship that we can read as we read these chapters and under these various kings, and bring in some of the ways that the Canaanites worshiped, and some reference to some of the gods, that false gods that are referenced in our readings. So this is just something for you to read as you wish, and to get out of it, you know, what you want. I do want to call your attention to one verse, Isaiah chapter 42 and verse 8. Isaiah says in 42 and 8, "I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not give my glory to another, nor my praises to graven images." Remember, last week we brought up Exodus 20, verses 4 and 5, where in the Ten Commandments God said they were not to make a graven image or any such likeness. And here's part of the mindset that God has toward these images. Praises belong to God. And the mindset that Israel and Judah had was that they could make a graven image, and that would be, in some sense, a representation of God, and they would worship God through these graven images. And God in Isaiah says, "I am the Lord, and I will not give my glory to another. My praises will not be given to graven images." So it's a passage to keep in mind as we study these lessons that we've got before us and these pages here on the false worship of Canaan and Judah. If you look through that or any of these handouts and you have a question, you know, we'll bring the question up. Now, if it's a tough question, give me advance warning, because I'll have to research it probably if it's anything to do with these false gods. It is not innate knowledge, I tell you. So, but if there's no comment or question, then we'll go into the lesson itself. Lesson 5. Now, I've got some handouts that are up here for Sunday. I didn't put them back there because that table is full of handouts. So I'll be removing those handouts as soon as service is over and put three handouts out there for Sunday's lesson. And actually, Sunday will be three class periods, a Sunday, a Wednesday, a Sunday, Lord willing. Okay. John, you brought up that these kings that we're studying tonight all died because of, some horrendous way. Let's elaborate on that. Just how did they die? Okay. It certainly wasn't a lifelong security to become king because of the mindset that the people had. One king was killed when he was drunk. Yeah, where were his men? Where was his army? Well, it was the one who killed him was the one that was commander over half his chariots. Yeah. He was a leader in his army. Okay, not the primary leader. Where was the main army when he did that? When he was drunk, where was the main army? Yeah, in a battle. You see, you can ask all sorts of questions. Well, why wasn't he with his men? Because you see, where was David when Israel, and I'm talking about the nation unified, was in battle? Where was David? Was David back in Jerusalem? Yeah. But primarily David was with his men. Later on, all through the reading, we see kings of Israel, kings of Judah, as they went to battle, they were leading the men. We see the same thing out of the kings of the heathen nations. Here, this king was not with his men, you see. So he was killed while he was drunk. The thing that we see from these six kings is that none of them learned from the mistakes of a previous king. They did not learn the mistakes that Jeroboam had made when he set up his false system of worship. But every one of is characteristic of every one of these that they continued in that same system of worship. Where was the first city that they reigned from? As you go through the reading, you'll see that Tirzah was a place where that they ruled from until Omri came, and Omri bought a piece of land, and he built the city there, and the city was named Samaria. And this probably showed some foresight on his part. The city was on a mound, I understand, about 300 feet high. It was along a couple of major highways. So there was some strategic, thought that went into the purchase of that land. And from that standpoint, Omri probably showed more leadership than any of the other kings. But this was leadership that was not spiritual in nature. What they needed was spiritual leadership. They didn't need the foresight to buy this piece of land versus that piece of land. They needed spiritual guidance. God can take care of which land they need to buy. God can take care of the defense of the city. You remember that we learned already from Rehoboam. Rehoboam built those 15 cities, fortified them. And that was his defense, and that's where his faith was. But God didn't save Rehoboam because of those 15 cities. He saved Rehoboam and Judah because of the faithfulness of some of the people. So Rehoboam didn't understand that. We have to understand that in our nation. Our security doesn't come upon defense systems and all that stuff. Our security comes upon our relationship with God. We have to understand that raising our family. Our security as a family doesn't come because we buy life insurance and because, you know, we try to send our kids to the best colleges and prepare them for the working world and such as that. Our security comes from obeying God and being faithful to Him. And we have to keep that in mind. We can lose sight of where the real security is because the world sidetracks us. And we have to be careful. So the mindset of these people was basically each one for himself. Each one did what was right. It's a carryover in philosophy from the times of the judges, where each man did what was right in his own eyes. Jeroboam, in setting of his false system, did what was right in his own eyes. And we see these kings basically the same way. So we'll pick up the study, you know, at this point. Anybody have any comment or question before we get started? Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. But, well, they had. They had priests. They had prophets. They had them. Well, God has always given his people leadership. They had it. But the thing God also gives us is a choice. They've had leadership. They chose not to follow it. And even in the lesson tonight, the prophets would come and talk to them about, you know, what they were doing and try to change them. And we're really going to get into that, Lord willing, in the next lesson with Elijah and King Ahab. We're really going to see the leadership that God gave, but they refused it. So the first king after, the son of Jeroboam was named Nadab. And I'm, you know, at the beginning of the handout. And he had a short reign of 2 years, and he did evil, following in the ways of his father. But there's some parallels between what was prophesied concerning him and what was prophesied concerning his father. The prophecy concerning his father was the death of his family. And we have the same thing concerning what happened. Well, actually, this was, you know, to Baasha, really, who killed Nadab. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. And John, you mentioned that Nadab was, or one king was up in a battle against, I think you said it, against the Philistines, and Elah was doing that, okay? Now, Elah was a city that had been, it was in the initial tribe of Dan, but it had been taken by the Philistines. It was a Levitical city. And so the Philistines are in control, and Elah's trying to take the city back. And so Baasha kills him while the battle is, you know, when they're, you know, encamped around Gibbethon. Well, this actually happened twice. Okay, there was two against this same city. The first time, Nadab in the chapter 15, verse 27, Baasha conspired against him and struck him down at Gibbethon. Now, when you turn chapter 16, then you've got a similar case there, where Zimri in verse 15 was in Tirzah, the capital, but the troops were against Gibbethon to the Philistines. So there's two occasions, two different of these kings, when they were encamped against this same city, with some period of time in between. So this is the first one. And so evidently, and we may have some history missing here, and if we do, we do. but the when Nadab was encamped against him, Baasha killed him, even though Baasha ruled for about 24 years. Either Baasha later on recaptured the city and lost it again, or he just never went back to capture it. The scriptures don't address that either way. But later on, after Baasha died, then Elah became king, and then he was killed, and Zimri became king. But Elah's men, not Elah himself, but Elah's men were encamped against Gibbethon. So it's two times this city was encamped against. And then when Baasha struck down Nadab in chapter 15 and around 25, 26, and 27, and then he went and killed all the house of Jeroboam, as was prophesied by Ahijah the Shilonite. That was back in chapter 14, one place that prophecy was given, when Jeroboam's son was sick, and his wife went to ask Ahijah. She was in disguise and asked Ahijah, you know, was her son going to live or die? And, of course, Ahijah knew her ruse. God had, you know, pre-warned him, and he foretold then, you know, that the entire house of Jeroboam would be destroyed, and in a gruesome way. And so Baasha was the instrument God used in order to carry that out. And the details are different, but they're the same as we go through the rest of these kings. Baasha, though, his rule in verse 30, it was the sins of Jeroboam that he sinned and made Israel to sin. And the anger of the Lord provoked the God, you know, Israel. That's according about Nadab. It goes on, though, in the next chapter, and it's the same thing. Actually, verse 34 of chapter 15. Baasha himself did what was evil, walked in the ways of Jeroboam. And God sent another prophet. And Jim, these... God was constantly sending prophets to these men, just constantly. And so here is Jehu. We saw the I don't know how to pronounce it, Hanani. We saw him last week as one that had gone to Asa and given him words. And so now his son is with Israel. And so Jehu comes to him and says, I exalted you. I lifted you up out of the dust. And look what you've done. So he's going to sweep away Baasha and his house, just like he did Jeroboam. So, and this is where he gives basically the same philosophy of prophecy that he gave to Jeroboam. Anyone belonging to Baasha who dies in the city, the dog shall eat. Anyone who dies in the field, the birds of the heavens shall eat. So certainly the idea of a death, you know, that was not an honorable death, but a death of destruction. And a death, you know, of shame of a family. So the same prophecy came to him, and so he died. Okay, but it says in verse 7, it says that this word by Jehu came against Asa for two reasons. What were the two reasons? Notice verse 7. I'm sorry? Well, the evil, wickedness, yeah. But what else? What had he done to the household of Jeroboam? He destroyed it. And God was pleased with that. But evidently, it was the way in which he did it. Okay, that God was displeased, and we don't have the reasons, but we have some other things that, you know, can teach us something about the thinking of God. Okay, I don't know what God's plan was in destroying the house of of Baasha, of Jeroboam. But it appears that perhaps what Baasha was guilty of was the same thing that some other rulers had been guilty of. And that is, while he was doing God's will, he wasn't doing it for the purpose of doing God's will. He was doing it more for the purpose of his own murderous heart. He was doing it more because he wanted to enact this out himself. It's one thing to be God's instrument, in this case of destruction, but it's another thing to take joy in that destruction and being God's instrument in that manner. There's a couple of things. You know, one, that Nadab was in a campaign against the Philistines. The Philistines have always been enemies of God's people. They're no different than they were when Goliath was defying God when David was young. They're no different. They haven't changed. They've never been God's people, and they're not now God's people. Now, how much did God want them to take, you know, that city back? I don't know. I can't say that. Scriptures doesn't say. But certainly, he was killed while Nadab was killed while he was in that campaign against the Philistines. In the book of Isaiah, chapter 10. This is an indictment against Assyria. And there's other passages that have this same thought. But this one passage will be suffice to get the thought of how God thinks. But beginning in Isaiah 10, in the 5th verse. O Assyria, the rod of my anger, the staff in their hands is my fury. Well, this is God expressing that Assyria was an instrument for him to enact punishment upon certain nations, including Israel. Against the godless nation I sent him, against the people of my wrath I command him, to take the spoil and seize plunder and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. But he does not so intend, and his heart does not so think, but it is in his heart to destroy. In other words, Assyria wasn't doing this because it was God's bidding. They were doing it because it's what they wanted to do. So it was serving the purpose of God, but they were going about it with a glee and with a zeal that portrayed a heart not in awe of God, but in awe of their own ability to destroy. Perhaps that's the mindset that Baasha had. Okay. Later on, there's a man that's anointed to be king over Israel called Jehu. He's a little bit further down the road in our study. And Jehu was to wipe out the house of Ahab. And he did. And he was rewarded for that. This was the longest dynasty, family of kings that northern Israel had. And it was the most in number that northern Israel had. There were five, including Jehu himself. But God was displeased with, again, this same attitude that Jehu exhibited. And the book of Hosea addresses that, okay, in a verse. Same point that we're making about the Assyrians. So, and we'll get to that study later on with Jehu. But perhaps that's what it is that he was doing this out of his own heart, not out of, you know, an allegiance to God. Proverbs 25 and verse 27. Proverbs 25 and 27 says that it's not wise to seek one's own glory. The idea of man being proud of his ability. It's not wise for us to seek our own glory. And you know, we need to be aware of that in our own lives. a man who can word a well, can lead a well-worded prayer, that can, you know, lead singing, understands music, and can really lead singing and draw the volume out of the people. With great oratory skills, a person that can stand up and just really not miss a lick in delivering a word perfect, you know, sermon. A church that gets so proud of abilities to sing or something that they have, and they look to that. Okay, these are things where we tend to seek our own glory and not the glory of God. So that's the thought that I have with Nahab, seeking his own glory and not the glory of God, exhibiting a zeal that came from a wrong heart, not from a heart that was devoted to God. And we know the teachings of Christ. The one who exalts himself will be humbled. One who humbles himself will be exalted. Any comment or question? Did the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. And see, it's common to all of these six men, all of them. They didn't learn from one to the other. Lessons of the past, you know, just meant nothing to them. Now, looking at Elah, who was the son of Baasha, we've already said in chapter 16 and verse 15, we see where the troops are. They are again encamped at Gibbethon against the Philistines. Now, back in verse 9, Zimri, the commander of half his chariots, conspires against him. And so, what is Elah doing in verse 9? Getting drunk. And Zimri comes in and kills him. And now Zimri becomes king. Now, there's a handout that I've got, and it's on the drinking. And we're not going to go over that handout, but there's a couple of things I want to bring to your attention. This particular case that we're looking at is on page 2 of the handout. It's in the middle, 1 Kings 16, 8 through 10. So the first column is a passage. The term used, I'm just picking out the term that's being used, and I'm using my particular version, drinking himself drunk. Your version may have something a little different than that, but it's basically going to be the same thing. So that's the term that the scriptures used. Well, who is this instruction to, or who is the reference made to? In this case, it's made to King Elah. And now, does this passage offer approval of the drinking? Well, no, it doesn't offer approval of it. It just makes a statement that he's drinking. Now, what happened? That's the fifth column. What happened? In this case, what happened because he was drinking? Well, he became drunk, and he was killed. Then the next column is, because of what happened, what does he lose or fail to do? Well, he lost his reign, he lost his life. Now, there's also another case that we're going to get to later in the study of the Kings. It actually was Kings of one of the heathen nations where they became drunk. And that's later on in this same handout. So we'll kind of go through the same process with them. And you can take this handout and just do whatever you want with it. But the reason I made it up was I tried to just look at what the passage says and let the passage show if it was any favorable light about it. What did it say about it? Did it say anything good? Did it say bad? Just let the passage speak for itself. Not going into the Greek, not trying to figure out what those words mean, just looking at the passage. What does it say? You'll find some places where there may appear to be, you know, an approval of it. You'll find one place where there is an approval of it. Well, what does the passage say about it? Okay. So, and I try not to this, not use a passage because it didn't say what I thought it should say, if you know what I'm saying. I try to just take a passage and whatever the passage says, what the passage says. So if you got any questions on anything of that, you know, ask me. That's fine. Email me. But that's the purpose of that handout. And it was brought on by looking at the kings that we're going to go about in this study and what happened to them. Now, when it comes particular to the king himself, for instance, we can look at the very beginning, Proverbs 31, verses 1 through 9. And there, if we'll turn there just a second. Everybody knows this proverb, this chapter, because it's a proverb that we use for what? What kind of teaching do we normally refer to from this proverb, this chapter? The virtuous woman. And we often overlook the first 9 verses of this proverb. And it begins in verse 2. Well, it's the words of King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him. So this is a mother talking to her son, who's a king. What are you doing, my son? What are you doing, son of my womb? What are you doing, son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, your ways to those who destroy kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to take strong drink. Well, why? Lest they drink and forget what has been decreed and preserve the rights of all the afflicted. So what she's talking about here is that a king has a responsibility toward his subjects that he cannot fulfill if he's turned himself over to alcohol, where his judgment is impaired, his ability to rule is impaired. So the idea of this paper is just let the passage speak for itself. See what it says. And that's what I've written down. So here Elah is violating a basic concept of what a king is for. Remember what was said to Rehoboam by the old men that canceled him? That if he would serve the people, they would serve him. See, Eli didn't have that concept of service in mind. He kills the king and goes and gets drunk. So he brought his death on himself, you see. Now, there's some other things. And that's all I'm going to say on this handout as far as, this lesson goes. But it's for your study if you choose to do so. And like I said, if you have any questions, get with me on it. I may not can answer them, but we'll study it together. So Zimri didn't go to the battlefield. Zimri stayed in the city from which, you know, the kings were reigning at that time, and he was killed there. And so now the man who Zimri reigns for how many days? 7 days. And now he's king killed by the commander of the army. Well, he's not actually killed by him. He goes to Tirzah to besiege the city, and then Zimri burns the house down around himself, so he kills himself. Zimri seems to be a man just taking advantage of a situation. He found the king drunk. He wanted to be king himself. He killed him. Now what's he do? You know, he didn't have any plans to lead the nation, you see. He just saw an opportunity for him to take the kingship. He took advantage of it. And then as soon as resistance came, he killed himself. And so Omri is now the king. But as we get into the 21st verse of chapter 16, Israel now was divided. It's not the first time Israel's had two kings. You remember when they had two kings before? Ishbosheth. Okay. Yeah, Saul and Ishbosheth. Okay, were both kings, you know, for a period of time. Okay, David over Judah and Ishbosheth over the rest. So here now is another occasion where a man named Tibni is ruling half the people, and Omri is ruling half, and for about 4 years. And you can see the years by looking at the reign of Asa, because it puts this in the years of Asa's reign. So if you want to follow those out, you can see this was about 4 years that these two were co-ruling over different parts. And they had their battles through this, a civil war, which Omri prevailed. Tizra dies. And so now Omri is the sole king for about 8 more years. He buys the land at Samaria, builds the capital city there. And Samaria now is the capital of this nation of 10 tribes until Israel is taken over by Syria, somewhat 150 or so, something like that, years later. Maybe a little longer now. But and it says, Omri did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, but it says something else. What does it say about his evil? It was more than any of those others that were before him. So not only did he follow in the ways of Jeroboam, verse 26, but evidently there were some other things that he was doing. He's referenced in the book of Micah, and the bell is going to catch us here in the book of Micah, but in chapter 6. Yeah.
We are sometimes slaves to our culture and didn't realize it. Every one of us exhibits some degree of our fathers or grandfathers, which is not necessarily bad. These texts in your study show it can be terrible if we imitate the moral or religious errors that they practice.
I'm glad you brought that up. That was a point I had later on, if time let me get to it. But that's exactly right. That's what you see in these men. Their concept of reformation was not to go back to the beginning, but go back to maybe their father, something like that. They didn't weed it out, go back to day one. In Micah chapter 6 and verse 16, so this will be a chapter you can read. We're going to go back over this again. It'll come up later. For you have kept the statutes of Omri and all the works of the house of Ahab, and you walked in all in their counsels. So we'll go over, as we get into Ahab, something about this life that they chose that followed Omri and Ahab. But Omri's sins were well known before God, and it's these things that perhaps we can get an inkling of from Micah and from looking at how Ahab lived that we see what Omri was leading them into, and then we learn what God meant. Okay, I'll have the handouts on the table here, 3 handouts for the next class, next 3 classes. Thanks.